This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
At the United States Postal Service, we deliver fast and affordably for small biz, big box, large scale, wholesale, retail, B2B, B2C, ASAP. USPS, delivering for America. Learn more at usps.com/delivering.
Whether taking a road trip to the beach, heading to the mountains, or driving to the city, summer adventures are nonstop fun in a new Honda. But let's face it, summer trips can really add up. That's why I love the fuel efficiency of Honda. With Honda, you can save your money for other things, like that awesome keychain at the convenience store, that brand new album you wanted, or whatever else your heart desires. New Hondas are arriving daily. See your local Honda dealer and start your summer adventures today.
Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and in this episode, I'll be once again talking to Simon Peach, who's the chief football writer for the Press Association. Simon also happens to be a Southampton supporter. He's on to share his thoughts on Southampton ahead of this match against Fulham. This is our View of the Opposition show, which is our preview for the upcoming match. I look forward to doing the show, and as always, talking to Simon, but before I do anything, I have to welcome him back to the show. He was just here. Simon, welcome back to Cottage Talk.
Always nice to be on.
How are you doing there, my friend? We were just talking off air. You're a little bit under the weather.
Yeah, well, that's what a stag do for 5 or 6 days in Lebanon will do to a man. But I should also use this as my work for the Lebanese Tourist Board to highly recommend Beirut. It's a lot better, nicer, and safer than a lot of people think.
I'm glad that you said that because I actually saw some of your pictures of that. So thank you for sharing that. It's very interesting that you said that. I saw that, and I'm glad that you're mentioning that, my friend.
Yeah, no, I'd recommend going. It's a fascinating place. I felt quite ignorant when I was there, actually, like all the details that I didn't know, and things you pick up on TV about countries like that. But it is still on the border with Syria, but it's a nice place. I'd recommend it.
Okay, excellent. All right, my friend, let's get into this. Let's start with talking about Southampton, and let's go to talking about what's been happening to Southampton since these two clubs first met. Obviously, new manager. We talked about that when you were on, talking about Manchester United. But let's talk about what's been going on with Southampton since the first time.
Quite a lot, really. I think I might have done on the last show, thanked Fulham for beating us. That game. I know things haven't gone to plan for you guys since that match, but for us, it was the catalyst for Mark Hughes' exit, timely exit. There was an immediate, things improved markedly over the new year. Things have gone awry a bit. There's still the same nagging issues. And due to the points elsewhere, of rival teams and things like that, Saints still find themselves in the relegation zone, but it feels like they're one or two good results away from the positivity returning, or maybe just one result. And I've got to say, I think the Fulham match is comfortably the biggest match of our season at the moment.
Okay, excellent there. Simon, it's funny because we were talking about Hughes and you were talking about, well, what will happen if they have a new manager. So let's talk about the new manager, because there's been a little bit more than just that new manager bounce. There's been a change with Southampton.
There has been. I've got to say, in the wake of the Arsenal game, I've seen, it's been the first kind of signs of not dissatisfaction, but just questions over Ralph Hasenhüttl. I still fully believe in him. I think he's done an amazing job, and it's been underappreciated quite how much he's had to change, both in terms of style of play, defensive organisation, getting this striker scoring, which is, I mean, that's every key facet of the game, really, that I've just described there. And he's had to basically press reset. In January, went with wholesale changes. The squad has had too much dead weight around its neck for a long time, and he was bold enough to get rid of that. But then the problem is Southampton didn't make any acquisitions, and they weren't intending to. His trust in young players over older players, older backup players, I should say, I've raised concerns about from the start, just because I think this is a bit of a strange, or a bit of a bold time to do it. But yeah, look, things have fallen off a bit. The Saints have been the nearly team so many times this season. They should have got a point at Cardiff. They should have beaten Burnley the week before. It's just, you could go through the whole season. We drew at home with Palace. It feels like one step forward, two steps back a bit at the moment. But I guess that's only to be expected when the guy whose process and mentality is all about physical output, and obviously tactics, but the physical output is key to that. And they've not had a pre-season, and he's coming at Christmas. That's always going to be tough.
Right. Very good there. And it's just very interesting how things have turned since you got rid of Hughes. And I can't say the same thing for Fulham. We'll be talking about them in just a bit. But back to Southampton, because there's a player that I think Fulham missed out on. And it's credit to Southampton for holding on to him. But Fulham missed Matt Target. Simon, your thoughts about Matt Target, because there are two players that I think Fulham have really missed. And they're both fullbacks. I think they miss Ryan Fredericks. I also think they miss Matt Target, because fullback, both of them have been a weakness.
Well, like me, Matt Target is a Southampton fan that grew up in a nearby town called Eastleigh. So I've always kept an eye on him and his progress. And I've got to know him relatively well, I guess you could say, from covering the England under-21s when he was playing for them and Southampton. So I've got to see a lot of him, a lot more than a lot of people did when he moved to Fulham. And I think I told the club official website that he would do well. And I was right. I have to, even a broken clock's right twice a day. I think Fulham deserve credit for taking his game on. He's come back to Southampton a more mature, better player. There's still questions over him, but I guess that's because his rival for left back is Ryan Bertrand, a Champions right. League winner, a England national, anything like that. But his injuries have allowed him some game time. Ralph Hasenhüttl clearly trusts him. He selected Target over Bertrand at Arsenal the other day. Yeah, he's a good player. From what I understand, Fulham were told a price in the summer, quite a high price. I guess in the current market, that's what players are going for, certainly English players, homegrown players. And Fulham did reach it, but just the penultimate day of the transfer window, which is too late for Southampton to hire a replacement, whether that be a loan or permanent. So I think if Fulham had put in that offer a week or two before the deadline, then he would be a Fulham player right now. And who knows how our seasons would look.
That hurts, Simon. But that's the business. You know, if you basically you're going back and forth, you're negotiating, and sometimes it could be too late. And in this instant, you're telling me it was too late. It's too bad, because I would like to have seen what Fulham would have looked like with Matt Target. I think he would have made a big difference. That's how high I am on him.
I'd also say, though, that Fulham, some of these signings haven't gone particularly well. But I think Fulham proved that they're now in getting deals done on that deadline day.
Yep.
But just some were too hard to pull off, just as they were in January.
Sure.
I personally like to see teams set up quicker, but that just wasn't to be. So. And we've all seen how things have panned out, sadly, at Fulham this season.
Yeah, it's not panned out well at all, my friend. All right, let's go back and let's talk about the first time the teams met. You've already said this is really the turning point for Southampton, which I find interesting. So is that what you learned from this? This is where Southampton basically bottomed out and then moved away from Mark Hughes and everything has gone up since then?
Well, it's gone up in terms of style, but not really in terms of position.
Right.
Sadly. Yeah, look, Saints enter this midweek games 18th in the table. That's not a stark improvement. But for anyone that watches them, the style has improved. There's a cohesion. The good players are playing well. The bad players have been shipped out. You'll remember, Russ, when I came on the show before that game and I predicted that Wesley Hoot would be at fault for a crucial goal.
Oh, you got it right.
It didn't take much joy in getting it right. It was just that obvious, and the manager wasn't making the change. So Wesley Hoot didn't get a look in, didn't even get a sniff under Hasenhüttl. He was loaned straight out to Celta Vigo, who have an option to buy him permanently. Saints have written that up as a bad job. They were the kind of movements that were impressive. He shored things up a little bit. He's got the midfield fighting. James Ward-Prowse has gone back to the play he looked like when he got an England call-up. Likewise, Nathan Redmond, he's come on leaps and bounds. He's Saints' best player right now. And 13, 14 months ago, he's being booed by his own fans. So he's done a lot of good things. The squad's just a bit shallow, a bit naive, and maybe just a bit weather-beaten. That the confidence must be all over the place.
Right.
After two or three years of under Claude Puel, not enjoying the football under Mauricio Pellegrino, not being successful, Mark Hughes, that fight to just get over the line and just getting over and then tailing off again. It's been a bit of a grind. But look, I do like what Hasenhüttl is doing. I just hope that a positive result comes around soon enough.
Okay. Let me ask you, because you brought up his name. What are your thoughts about the sacking of Claude Puel?
At Leicester?
Yes.
Well, I don't take great joy in anyone losing their job, to be honest, but I told Leicester fans, I remember when we sat from Southampton, everyone went, oh, you know, you got to a cup final, you finished eighth. What reward do you want? Well, do you know what? You've got to dig a little bit deeper than that to actually find out the reasons. I still think there was a right decision to get rid of him. I just think it was the wrong reason to then make the fans think that every time they say sack him, they should sack him. That's just, I think the Southampton fans felt empowered. So Mauricio Pellegrino's job Mauricio Pellegrino was on hiding to nothing, as was Mark Hughes when things took a downturn. There's no way of coming back up. Hasn't lost the fans yet. That's the key. He's got them on side. But I questioned his selections, his substitutions, or rather, when I say selections, his rotation policy, how he doesn't focus on the cups. I know we reached the cup final, but I think that was in spite of him rather than because of him. It's such a shallow thing, but we're in the era of the personality manager, Jurgen Klopp. Whoever you look at, Ranieri's a personality manager.
Yeah.
And he comes into a press conference grumbling, look, this guy speaks one more language, some would argue two more languages than I do. So I'm not gonna crucify him for that. But can you imagine being in a dressing room with him and he's trying to fire you up? I just footballers need to be. It's all about man management now, as much as tactics.
Right.
And I just don't think he had that.
Okay, very good there, Simon. All right, I mentioned this to you earlier in the season. We went through strengths and weaknesses of WhoScored.com. I'm not going to do that this time. I'm just curious, right now, under the new manager, where do you see the strengths and weaknesses heading into this match?
Where do we start? I think for Southampton, the strengths are the midfield. I like the midfield. James Ward-Prowse looks excellent. Højbjerg is a very good player. You've actually got talented options in the midfield now. Mario Lemina was playing the Champions League final in 2017 for Juventus, and he's not really done it for us at the moment. But I'm not sure he's going to be available this time. But then you've got Oriol Romeu, you've got Callum Slattery's coming through, he's good. We had good options. I think at fullback, We have good left-sided options, the aforementioned Matt Target and obviously Ryan Birch. And on the right-hand side, I as much as I dislike Cedric Suarez's attitude, he's a good player. He was an elite-level fullback, and he's been replaced by two teenagers or very young academy players. So that's a little bit of concern. In terms of weaknesses, we don't score enough goals. And we our heads drop. So, up front, I'm a little bit concerned as to Redmond, very, very good. But other than that, when you, the injuries are bitten a bit at the moment.
Right.
Where are the goals going to come from?
I was just about to ask you about that because I saw that you're dealing with injuries. We're talking about injury to Danny Ings, Michael Obafemi, and there's a possibility Shane Long, I was reading, might be involved again.
Well, if Shane Long could score, that would be nice. look, there's a lot of people actually at Southampton, that don't rate Shane Long at all, and I defend him because I think he's a nuisance factor, but he needs to play with someone else. Sadly, there aren't really that options to play up with him at the moment. Obafemi came on at half-time against Arsenal, came off 20 minutes later with a recurrence of a hamstring injury. It doesn't sound good from what Hasenhüttl said, but it's just part of the growing issues that he's having. Danny Ings was always going to be an injury concern throughout this whole season, and sadly that's continued. And then you're going to be relying on Charlie Austin, who is a great goal scorer, but is immobile by comparison to Ings, who's a pressing forward, and Redmond, whose pace obviously gets behind. So perhaps not, I guess, one of the negatives against him is he hasn't found a way of, admittedly, he hasn't got all the pieces of the puzzle available to him, but finding a way of getting his strikers effectively being a threat.
Okay, very good. As we look forward to this match, key players, it sounds like you're talking about, if I'm reading between the lines, that the key for you is in midfield.
Yeah, the key's for me in midfield, and then how they feed, both how they protect the back five and how they feed the whatever dynamic he chooses up front. Look, Ward-Prowse is someone that I've rated for a very long time. Someone for 5 or 6 years ago I was saying would be a future England captain. I'm not sure he'll be a future England captain anymore.
Okay.
But I think he'll be a future England midfielder, as in more than one cap that he already has. What Hasenhüttl has done is put aggression into his game. He's a nice boy from a nice school. I was going to say a nice area, but he's from Portsmouth, so I can't say that. But he's a well-raised guy. It may be too nice. He's got that aggression into him. He's got a bit of that edge to him now, and that's really good to see. And it seems to have taken his game up. Romeo had a bad season last season, but he's an excellent player. He came through the Barcelona Academy. He's a solid defensive midfielder. And Højbjerg, who Pep Guardiola loved when he was at Bayern Munich, he didn't eventually break through and make an impact at Bayern Munich, but he's a talented player, and he's basically Southampton's captain in all but name. He wears the armband now and again, but it kind of gets handed around a bit. There's not like a definitive captain at the moment. I like him. And then, if you can feed the forwards and protect the back line, which they should be able to, better. But they've got the ability.
Okay, very good there, Simon. All right, coming up next, I'm going to be asking Simon his thoughts on form.
Whether taking a road trip to the beach, heading to the mountains, or driving to the city, summer adventures are nonstop fun in a new Honda. But let's face it, summer trips can really add up. That's why I love the fuel efficiency of Honda. With Honda, you can save your money for other things, like that awesome keychain at the convenience store, that brand new album you wanted, or whatever else your heart desires. New Hondas are arriving daily. See your local Honda dealer and start your summer adventures today.
Okay, Simon, let's get back into this. Let's now talk about form. You were at the match against Manchester United at Craven Cottage. I know you enjoyed your return. I know you wanted to come back. So what did you make of form? We have to start right there from you seeing them in person.
Well, I was a little bit shocked. I'd seen gradual improvements under Ranieri, and obviously around Christmas time, you get overwhelmed with matches and analysis, and it's hard for me. My bread and butter is following Manchester United, every cop spit and splatter, and supporting Southampton. You don't get to see as much as everything else, but there were some interesting articles that you've thrown my way before that game, and I was reading them and got a better understanding of where Fulham were at. So I went into, and that I was going to say the nice walk to the stadium, but it would have been nice if there wasn't a park run going on. I was dodging people everywhere I walked. But I was genuinely shocked at just how bad Fulham were. Because I said to you before that I thought you guys doing enough, you need to stay up. And on paper, you do. I don't think anyone... You've got a squad that should be mid-table. Right. Maybe not safe mid-table, but that the round pegs and the square holes and...
I've been saying it, Simon, until I'm blue in the face.
And the lack of cohesion. I thought seeing Fulham at that stage of the season, there's no excuse. Doesn't matter if you've had two managers for that performance. Look, I thought Fulham started quite brightly. Well, they did start quite brightly.
They did.
There was that cross to the far post. Should have done better. But it was like when Le Marchand came out. I think it was only 8 minutes in. He brought the ball out from the back and got tackled and United countered, and that was like the facade of confidence just dropped.
It just went right down, Simon.
And it disappeared at the click of a finger. And when Pogba scored, it was because they were so scared of Martial getting onto his right foot. Well, that's fine. But you also have the guy who was the most expensive player in the world not so long ago making a run just behind the defence. Of course, it was a great finish. Of course, Rico could have done better. But that then sets the tone. Then Martial's goal was brilliant, but the defence...
Oh, it was.
Well, just the tracking was pathetic. Just knock this guy down, yep. Take the yellow card, take one for your team, and the game was dead. So United went into cruise control, didn't they? And they... indecision over the goalkeepers this season, indecision over the centre-backs, not being to fulfil the full-back positions properly, not being able to get the best out of your midfielders, no matter how talented they are. You've got a great striker, but you don't give them enough service. So, I mean, all of that combined is... why Fulham are in this mess. And it's sad because this was supposed to be... I was so excited to see Fulham this season. You faded away, haven't you, sadly? You'll still beat Southampton because that's what happens. But
we'll see on that. But what's sad about this, Simon, you know, you're someone that obviously covered Fulham and I'm a fan, it's just hard to watch the demise of Football Club in front of your eyes. And you talked about the talent. It's there. It is totally there. But there are so many issues within that talent, getting it to play to where you need it to be. And that's going to lead me to ask you about Ranieri, because everyone has a piece of the blame when you talk about this season. So I want your thoughts on him. You've already mentioned square pegs and round holes. I totally agree with that. But I think some of those problems are with his decisions.
Yeah, look, it's hard to see Ranieri being in charge at the start of next season. I mean, it's hard to see him being in charge at the start of next month if you guys lose at Southampton on Wednesday, because he was brought in to steady the ship. He hasn't done that. He's been brought in to bring an upturn results. He hasn't done that. He's been there to bring in an upturn in victories and everything else. There's not many columns where there's been a marked improvement, if any columns. There just hasn't been that bounce. Ranieri's done an incredible job and should go down as one of the best managers in Premier League history for what he did with Leicester. He walked into a situation there which was a once-in-a-lifetime situation, and he was brilliant. He's walked into this situation and there just isn't the same time to prepare the squad. There isn't the same ability within the squad, or abilities in terms of what he can get out of them. It hasn't been a good fit.
To be fair, I totally agree.
I saw the appointment, my eyebrows were raised. My first reaction to a Premier League winning manager coming in was, oh, okay. But obviously there was that initial upturn. Who am I to say what's a bad appointment, a good appointment? I didn't think Javi Gracia was going to be particularly good at Watford. And look at Gary Lineker when he went into Leicester. He was like, what, really, Claudio Ranieri? Obviously done very well, but it felt like a peculiar... Other than the fact that he lived nearby, I wasn't really sure on what grounds he was hired. His last job with Nantes didn't go particularly well. I would have liked a younger, dynamic coach as manager of my club. yeah, it's a strange one. As I've said on previous shows, Fulham have so many good people working at that club, and I know how much of a slog it has been to get back. And I'm also aware from my friends at Sport Fulham just how special last season was.
Oh, it was.
So this has been an anticlimax of gargantuan proportions. But unlike other clubs that I've seen have similar issues over the years, I don't think it's for the lack of good people. I just think it's been some poor decision-making, sadly.
See, I agree with you, Simon, and I've said this about the recruitment. I don't have any problem with them being ambitious. I just don't think they brought in the right players, and that's simple. You know,
I think it's more, in my humble opinion, that they brought in too many.
Okay.
So look at QPR when they came up. They made some signings under Warnock. Then Tony Fernandes came in and completed a takeover. They signed Sean Wright, Phillips, and all these different people. Well, what they did is they lost the momentum. They lost that cohesion that got them up there in the first place. They did try to build Rome in a day, and ultimately, we've seen what happened. I'm not talking about financial comparisons or anything like that, but it just didn't work because the glue that brought everyone together. Look at Bournemouth. They've still got a defence from the Championship or League One because that's allowed them to build. They will need to replace them sooner rather than later, but they kept that group together and walked before they could run. I think on paper, the signings still look good. Maybe not Anguissa.
I know they do.
Maybe not Fabbri. I mean, I don't really understand the point of bringing him in, and then Rico, and then playing Bettinelli after a while. That's confused me. Some of the other signings don't look as good. Maybe Le Marchand will come good, but from what I've seen, I've not been particularly blown away by him. Callum Chambers has been good. Look, all these people have done okay, but I think that just too much is trying to be changed.
Okay, and that's a fair criticism. Simon, all right, let's move on. I asked you this last time. You obviously had a chance to take a look at Fulham when you watched them play Manchester United. What Fulham players concern you most in the match? I'm assuming you have to start with Mitrovic.
Always start with Mitrovic because he's a pain and he's a good footballer. Look, what I should say to start off with is Saints have an unerring knack of losing to bad sides. So if you're going to get a positive result between now and the end of the season, this could be it. I think Babel's looked good since he's come in, which has surprised me. Obviously, Kearney and Sesney on coming back inside, if they're retained and given the ability to go forward, they concern me because they're very, very good players and I don't understand why they went in the first place. So I think Fulham have the attacking capabilities to hurt Saints if they can pull it together.
Okay. Very good. All right, let's quickly through matchups. Fulham's attack versus Southampton's defense. Who do you give the advantage to?
Marginally Fulham's attack, because Southampton's defense has not looked steady enough. It has at times, but not at others. It seems a psychological thing. It has been the problem all season.
Okay. Let's flip it. Southampton's attack versus Fulham's defense. Can I just say I'll give it to Southampton? I know you haven't scored that many goals. But Fulham's defense is terrible.
I was going to say, if Saints don't at least score on Wednesday, then something's gone horribly wrong. I'd love to know the statistics of just the combinations of the defense, because every time I look at the lineups, it's just completely different. It feels like, and the results have been inevitable. And I've not really rated Odoi. I don't know if Le Marchand will be involved. I don't rate him. I think Christie is a good Championship player. I'm not seeing enough of him in the Premier League to think he's any good. Norbert wasn't very good at West Ham. Ream's a good Championship player, as is Bryan. I mean, look at these players.
Two major Championship players.
If Mawson was playing, I think he's a very, very good defender.
Well, I was going to ask you about him, Simon, because Emilio Danello actually had a commentary on this. He was on Love Sport, and he actually said that he believes that Fulham's fortunes defensively went down when Mawson went down again, because Fulham were starting to get better defensively, and Mawson was a big part of that. So they might have, you know, again, that might be a factor in all of this.
Yeah, I think he's a good player. I mean, there's a reason he was called up for England. There's a reason that a lot of big clubs were looking at him. I've got to say, I was surprised when he went to Fulham ahead instead of them, but maybe those options didn't come to fruition in the end. He seems like a good character. He's a good player. He's good in both boxes. So Yeah, that may well be a point. That might well have, I was going to say the final nail on Fulham's coffin. You're not down yet, but
right,
you need to win on Wednesday, don't you?
Absolutely, Simon. All right. Quickly, central midfield battle. You've already talked about how good the Southampton midfield is. Who do you give the advantage to?
Southampton, but Edric, it's hard to know what combination that Ranieri is going to go with. I think the strange thing is, I think Kearney and Seri would, and maybe even Chambers would get into Southampton's midfield. Maybe not all at the same time, obviously, but right. But I just don't see them as, they're just not on the game at the moment of a team. Chambers, I'm interested to see what kind of reaction he gets, because he left Southampton at the drop of a hat in 2014 for supposedly bigger and better things. And with respect, he's been relegated with Middlesbrough, and he's had some pretty other, he's not exactly come on leaps and bounds.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of reaction he gets, because it's not always greener on the other side.
No. All right, my friend. Who is the coaching advantage? This one's interesting.
Well, you think it's Ralph Hasenhüttl. Things didn't go well yesterday against Arsenal at Arsenal. As I said, first rumbles of criticism, but he had 2 weeks, near enough 2 weeks, working with the team, with the side at the FA Cup in Tenerife, drilling them on what he wants. And I thought that was going to bring a better result, certainly a better performance than it did on Sunday. And Ranieri just seems to be muddling through. I mean, when I heard the chance of, you don't know what you're doing, singing Ryan Sessegnon's name at the Man United game, for me, that was when the game was up. So now it feels like a matter of when rather than if he's fired, sadly.
Okay, very good. All right, let's go into my section of predictions. First, I'm going to ask you, what does Southampton need to do to win this match?
Stay compact at the back and just pick holes in Fulham's defence. Because if you can't pick holes in that defence, then Southampton are going to really struggle for the rest of the season.
Okay, let's flip it. What does Fulham need to do to win this match? How can they beat Southampton?
Well, Southampton have a really poor home record over the last 2.5 years. I mean, really, really poor. Wouldn't surprise me if it's the worst in the Premier League over that period. And as a result, the fans, as great as they are quicker to turn than most. So if Fulham can get in there, counter-attack, and get an early goal, they can change the mood of that place quite quickly. And it's, having been there as a fan myself, as a season ticket holder when we went down in 2005, I know how hard it is to turn that ship around, because it's not an atmospheric place necessarily. A bit like Craven Cottage, when the good times are good, the place is bouncing. But when things go down, it's like, what is this? And there's not that hardcore supporters to drag them forward. If you can get the Saints fans and Saints players frustrated, I think Fulham have got a good chance of getting a positive result.
Wow, very interesting. Okay. It's time for your prediction. You got the prediction right last time, and so I'm kind of hoping you lean towards Fulham. I'm just kidding there, Simon.
I am going to.
Really? Okay, fantastic. What's your prediction for this match?
Well, I'm going to predict Fulham to win 2-1 because...
Wow!
I've spent the whole episode saying how rubbish Saints are and how, like, Saints haven't been as bad as everyone thinks they are. But at the same time, our last home match was a loss to Cardiff, a Cardiff side whose next game they lost 5-1 at home to Watford. This is what we do. We have lost home and away to Cardiff. Wouldn't surprise me if we lose home and away to Fulham.
Okay.
It also wouldn't surprise me if we stay up, because that's the kind of basket case club that we are. I'm intending to go to the game, so I hope my prediction's incorrect, but I'm going Fulham 2-1 win.
Okay. Well, my prediction was going to be different. Simon, you just inspired me. I'm going to join you. I'm going to say 2-1 to Fulham. I can't believe I'm going to be predicting Fulham the way they've been playing. But something you said just actually just rang true with me about what's been going on with Southampton. So I'm just going to – can't believe I'm doing this. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to say 2-1 to Fulham. Listen, Simon, please feel better soon. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Not a problem, and nice chat. I wish you luck for the rest of the season after Wednesday night, and hope there's some, at the very least, some memorable afternoons and evenings between now and the end of the season.
Thank you, Simon. I appreciate that. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Cottage Talk. For my guest, Simon Peach, my name is Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.
Whether taking a road trip to the beach, heading to the mountains, or driving to the city, summer adventures are nonstop fun in a new Honda. But let's face it, summer trips can really add up. That's why I love the fuel efficiency of Honda. With Honda, you can save your money for other things, like that awesome keychain at the convenience store, that brand new album you wanted, or whatever else your heart desires. New Hondas are arriving daily. See your local Honda dealer and start your summer adventures today.
Industry-leading, difference-making, tomorrow-shaping, world-changing. These are a few of the adjectives people use to describe the technologies and companies Deloitte works with day in and day out. Join us, and soon those very same adjectives could describe your career too. Explore technology careers at Deloitte.com/tech careers and make an impact on business, technology, and society while engineering your future. At Deloitte.
It's the 90th minute and all to play for at the end of the match. All your mates are around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? I know I'm in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See McDonald's.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.